No, it's always
Hi, my guest tonight is Marianne Cairns or Cairns. I'm not too sure about their last name pronunciation.
always.
And she's going to introduce herself. And here she is.
Hello. So I'm Marianne Cairns. Gosh, singer, songwriter, music creator. And well, I kind of am fascinated by stories. I think that's one of the main things really is I feel like I'm a storyteller. And I write these, play them. I'm here in my little studio here. And yeah, I've well, I don't know. What do you really want to know about me? It's like I
Well, I
guess
thought
I was.
basically we'd start with what interested you to get into music? Because everybody's musical journey is slightly different from everybody else's.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, I guess I grew up in kind of a musical family, as in they weren't professional, but my mum played flute and piano, and she was qualified to be a flute teacher, though she didn't actually teach. And my dad used to play violin, and he was a minister. He used to actually sing Bob Dylan songs to his youth group in Scotland when I was little. And then we immigrated to Australia, and that's where I grew up. And I remember one day I really liked music, and I did music at school. And one day we were told, right, you have to go and write a song. And we was put off in pairs and sent off. And I was really, really kind of pissed off about it. And I was like, how does she expect me to write a song? I don't know how to write a song. And I said, I bet you just have to strum a chord. And then I just like sang some words. And I sort of went, oh, I can do this. And it was like a real light bulb moment, a real sort of eye opener that actually I can, because I'd always written poems and stuff as a kid, and I just never really put together the fact that you could write like a poem, mean something, and you could combine that with music yourself, you know?
That's what I think
And
most lyrics are really like. If you read most songs, if you read them just like about the music, sometimes they do seem very much like a poem, don't they? The way
yeah.
the way they go a lot, like the way Shakespeare used to write. Yeah, he used to make sure it is always following the tone of the other sentence, isn't it? That sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I kind of think Shakespeare's on another level. A long time ago, I was in a version of All's Well That Ends Well with an amateur, theatre company, and wow, I mean, my goodness, Shakespeare is like no other. So, but that's exactly right. It's something about the words and the meter, and I think for me, I'm just fascinated by stories. Like I read all the time. I almost have to, I have to actually make myself not read because I want to read all the time. Because I sort of, I guess you sort of go into different worlds, don't you? Immerse yourself in a different place. And I've come to the point that I've realized that's what I'd like my songs to do for people, is that they can kind of, it can transport them into a different space and time, into a different, transport them somewhere else for not like a book, not like a long book, but like for that short period of time, immerse into another world, into another story. Yeah, that I think is the fascination for me.
So when you're writing a song, what is easier comes first? Is it the lyrics or is it the music?
Most of the time, I start off with a lyric, and sometimes, yeah, I'll start off with an entire lyric, and then at some point, I sing it. And it's like when I've done songwriting workshops and stuff. I used to do quite a lot of songwriting workshops. I haven't been doing many at the moment, but basically, if you take a lyric and you give it to someone and you say, "Sing it, just sing it," and somebody looks at the words and sings the first thing that comes into their head. You go around a room of people and do that, and everyone's actually going to sing something completely different. Like it's really quite a bizarre thing. So for me, yeah, I tend to start that way. But in saying that, I do mix it up a bit. Like sometimes I will come up with a guitar riff and I might sit with it for years, to be honest. Sometimes I've worked on this thing and I just have this little riff and every now and then I go back to it and I like it. And eventually I probably like, I might like it. Oh, for the song The Devil's Fly, which is on my album Come to Me. It's got the video that I really like for The Devil's Fly. But what it was this guitar riff. And then I had these lyrics that I'd written years before. In fact, I wrote m most of them. They changed a little bit, but I actually wrote some of them when I was at school, which were like published anonymously. I'm not quite sure it was anonymously, but I did write them. And one day I kind of looked at them and I went, oh, and they went together. But it took me years before I kind of realized that they did go together, because the words for The Devil's Fly I used to use at sound checks for years. If life, it's life itself, is nothing, live to die and cry and scream the thought of every preacher who teaches how to lie. And I used to use this as a sound check thing just for the voice. But when I eventually recorded it, it was, I mean, when I eventually wrote it, it wasn't that. It didn't have the rhythm, the same rhythm. It was completely different because it went with the chords. I don't actually have a guitar in here, but it was like, if life out there itself is nothing, live to die and cry. So it was completely different to how I originally write it. Yeah, but once in a while, yeah, I'll find a chord or a melody or something, and actually, in fact, on my most recent album, Anew, I've got a track that's actually instrumental. It's very short, but and I ended up singing in it, but I'm not singing words, so it's got no words at all. It just that's how it felt it needed to be. So I do go off on a tangent, and I figure I'm a storyteller, but in that song it's instrumental.
Now, what do you get inspired? You say like stories. Do you like when you read a story? I know you did one about the lady who was to do flying airplanes.
Yes, flew away.
I thought it was very interesting. You did it almost like an autobiographical song about her. Like you got inside her head, and that was what she was thinking at the time. Well, that's why I perceived it. I don't know. That's why you wanted to show it. That's what I perceived.
Well, yeah, I actually that song is not on the album Femina Australis, but what that is the stories of 12 Australian women, real women who lived a long time ago. They'd all passed on. And so I'm really, as I say, I read a lot. I'm into stories, and I have just discovered that like the truth is way stronger than fiction. Like you just wouldn't believe it, but Flew Away, that was a really, for me, a real mind spin, because I knew this old lady lived in my parents' block, and I used to talk to her when my kids were little sometimes, and she was quite fierce. She'd always sort of come up and said, who, what are you doing here? Who are you with? Because she was always worried that people would come in from outside the flats or whatever, and not supposed to be there. And so I was always sort of explaining who I was. So she was quite a fierce old lady. And it wasn't until, years and years after that, at least 10 years later, that I discovered that she had been one of Australia's early acrobatic pilots. Or early female pilots, one of the first female pilots. And in fact, her flying suit is in the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney, a sort of a
Wow.
woman's early aviator's flying suit. Yeah, with the goggles and, the whole thing. Well, actually, it had a
Like a
Anyway,
female Biggles, like a female Biggles.
this beautiful flying suit. And and for fun, she told my mum once that they used to sometimes fly under the Harbour Bridge for fun, like they'd fly under and take off, and then no one they couldn't get traced. It was like, somebody flew under the Harbour Bridge, they're not supposed to do that. And that was, what she used to do for fun. But when I met her, she was this little old lady, and putting the two together, that's life, isn't it? We all start somewhere and we end up somewhere. With a bit of luck, we have a lot of fun in between. But it's like you just don't know when you meet, a little gray-haired old lady. You don't know what she did, and it just really stunned me, that one. And I was just really fascinated by it. And then I looked up and I found, all the stuff. I found this, I sort of went to the power. I'd been at the Powerhouse Museum, and anyway, I found out all this information about her, and I wrote that song. But it's quite hard when you're writing about real people and real history, because one of the weird things in, as this came up massively with Femina Australis, is trying to find what the real story is.
Yeah, because it sometimes there's fiction added on. Unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast, isn't it?
And you don't know. And this book says this about somebody, but this book says that about them. And this book says, oh, they're all wrong. This is what happened. And when it's a long time ago, you don't know. So at some point, you have to make an educated guess. You have to read what you can and then go, well, actually, because this, and this, I think this is what really happened. And you go with that. One of my songs, Kate Kelly, it's about Ned Kelly's little sister. And the whole story of that, and of how Ned Kelly actually became an outlaw, was protecting his little sister from a drunk policeman. That whole thing is like, there's been so many books and movies and everything made of it, but this little museum in Glenrowan, which is made like the family home of the Kellys, was just mind-boggling, the story that it told. And
Well, as you say, it's strange connections because Holsworthy has got a direct connection with Australia because one of the ladies that was born here years ago, years and years ago, married someone that ended up being a governor of a state in Australia.
Which
So
state?
that's a good connection there, isn't there?
It is. It
So
is.
I like because we. I like. I wonder, and also, what when you write, do you have you ever wrote such a sad song that it came from here? That like you say, you might have lost someone, but you wanted to say, so express it, like I did with my wife. When my wife died, I wrote a book about her, like a little autobiography, because I felt I needed to do that to get it out of my system a bit. Have you ever wrote something similar to that?
I have, but I think sometimes when the I really believe in songwriting as a kind of self-therapy as well. When you've got that all bubbling inside you, that's all happening, and it's got to get out. It's a self-expression, I really do.
I imagine you quite like country and western songs because a lot of country and western songs, I would have thought the early 70s, probably late 80s, they tell a proper story in the song. There's a lot of like, he left me, why did he leave me? She went this way, he went that way. It's all that kind of intermixing, but it's like, it does it on both levels. It doesn't just stick to he, like, that's his version, that's your version. It tries to tell all the versions of the. That what they're trying to express in the song.
I actually really, really love some of the country songs. Have amazing stories from them, absolutely amazing. Yeah, and I sometimes think that the song "Kids from the Burbs," which I just released a live version of, which it is the live versions on this album that's coming out, the live at Ekotan Studios, Volume One. But "Kids from the Burbs" was on an album that I recorded way back in 2004. It would have come out. An album called Stories from Beneath. But Kids from the Burbs was a song about my sort of teenage years. And it's, and that, you know what? That was very much kind of a therapy in a way in just telling the story of what happened, because it was about kind of, because there was this winter, cold, dark winter in Sydney, which you think cold and dark in Australia, you know, is not like to have very cold winter, but Sydney can be pretty miserable in the winter, and you have shorter days and it is cold. No one has central heating because you're supposed to be in a hot place. And so, you know, he was this long, cold, dark winter, and hanging out with Liz and Michael, my two best friends. And then I went back to school, and they so I kept hanging out, but it was basically what happened then, because they were this real love story. But then he basically became kind of disappearing, and he became a heroin addict. And the last time I saw him, he was waiting in a park for customers, as he'd become a male prostitute to feed his habit. And when he saw me, he's just like, "Oh, hey, Marion, good to see you. How's Liz?" Asking after the girl who he'd been in love with. He was still in love, though.
Yeah, but
And
that's life. Sometimes it can take you down this dark
yeah,
avenue, and once you're stuck in this little
absolutely.
rut, it people think, oh, it's easy to get out the rut, but it's not, because sometimes you need that little bit of a boost. You've got to do it yourself, obviously, because it's got to come from you. But sometimes you do need someone that comes along and says, "I'll help you. If you help yourself, I'll give you a home, or make sure you're fed and clothed." But anything, you start going down that hill again, there's the door. Bye.
Yeah, that's it. But it's like, and I've never known what happened to him. Never known, because I mean, he was probably 17 last time I saw him, you know. It's and it's like, you lose track with people, and it was like, but telling that story, I feel in some ways, I mean, it almost could be that sort of, you know, that country song, "Hey, we used to do this, and then it went on here, and this happened, and that happened, and that happened, and hey, I never saw him again," you know. And you know what, and so I often feel quite an affinity for some country music. And I was lucky enough a long time ago to meet Willie Nelson
Wow.
after a
That was
gig at the Royal Albert Hall, and I was just like in awe. I just thought,
starstruck sort
oh
of
my
thing,
God,
yeah.
yeah. And there were all these journalists sort of around him, and then I sort of lined up, and then and he obviously thought I was a journalist, and I was just like, "Thank you, thank you. That was a great show. I loved it. Thank you very much." You know, and he said, "Oh, you know," because I had a shaved head at the time, so I probably looked, you know, a bit bizarre at a sort of country music sort of festival at the time, because we're talking about, you know, years ago, you know. But it's like, oh, that was just beautiful. I'm proud of that. I got to shake Willie Nelson's hand, you know, because yeah, there's a
Have you done anybody collabs with famous people, or would you like to do a collab with anybody famous?
yes. I mean, oh, yeah, I would. Do you know, one of the people I would just like sort of die and go to heaven ha happy sort of doing a collab with would be like Suzanne Vega. You
Yes, yeah,
know,
so I thought your two styles would go quite well.
yeah, I think that would just be amazing. 'Cause she is like, what a thing about words, you know, that sort of, "Today I am a small blue thing made of china, made of glass." I mean, that is like poetry, isn't it? You know, she's amazing. Tracy Chapman, It'd be great. I always dreamed of having a collab with a David Bowie, but obviously it was not to be. I think so many of us around the world just like were just stunned when he died. Just the
It's
possibilities.
because he did such a broad spectrum of work.
Yes, didn't he? Yeah. And I,
You can't
yeah.
really tie him down to one gender too much because he always tried to swap and change. But it didn't
Yeah.
always work, but at least he tried to make be brave enough to do it.
And he was so brave to do it, and he did it, and he did it in a time where that just sort of wasn't done. I can't say I'm always, oh, it's probably because I'm his Bowie fan. I get things popping up on Facebook and stuff about him all the time, and for some reason something popped up like yesterday about David Bowie and how this girl had and it had oh, I think somebody's written a book, and she used to do his hair. Back in the early days when he'd had like one hit, and apparently she met him when she saw him out the window, and he was walking down the street with his wife and their baby in the pram, but he was in complete woman's outfit with the lovely dress and everything, and she designed his red spiky hair,
Wow.
yeah. And she's got a book out. I can't remember who or what about it, but I thought, wow, that sounds really interesting. So you sort of hear little bits from people's lives, and they're fascinating. Yeah.
I know you do quite a lot of videos. Do you like your videos like the old style guitar in hand, sing a song? Or do you like sometimes doing a video like a little vignette, a bit like a-ha? When they did like the bike, like the like a comic version of their song.
Oh yeah, that was an amazing video, isn't it? That was really cool. Oh gosh, really, I have big budget ideas, but you can't really do that, most of the time. My favorite videos that I made were from the Come To Me album. It was like the Devil's Fly was my favorite, because we just went off into the bush in the middle of nowhere, and then somebody pointed us towards like this mesa and said and took us up to this cave in there and stuff, and I ended up sort of dancing on top of them, and we used a drone, and that to me is I think the type of video in some ways I really love. I guess because I feel very connected with nature. And so,
Well, you would be where you are. I mean, you've literally got it on your doorstep, wouldn't you? Literally go outside the door, it's there.
Well, that's the thing about Australia. But at the moment, I'm living in Guernsey, so I'm
Yeah.
not very far from you in Devon there. So
Yeah.
even here, you're on an island, so you've got the sea and you've got sort of cliffs and beaches and stuff. So it's like you're still very close to nature. But I found it's the last couple of videos I've kind of, well, the most recent one has been for Give to the Chase, which has just come out as a single. And that, in actual fact, it was just we took some video footage of a gig that I did for International Women's Day. So it was just like one camera set up in a place. And bizarrely, when I went to it, I played it at exactly the right tempo. Exactly the right tempo as the recording that I did, and that surprised me so much, and so it kind of just fitted together.
Yeah,
So
because that's a bit I think people don't understand. When they go to see a concert, they expect it to be the same sound exactly as an album. Obviously, you're going to play as close as you can, but you can never get it to studio quality because you haven't got the actual studio quality on the on there, have you? You haven't got all the whistles and but you've got some, but not the whole lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. And particularly that, okay, so I play piano and I play percussion and I play guitar. And when I'm recording, most of the time, I'll do all of it and layer it. But then I need a big band to go out with. And I just can't do that at the moment. So I can only go out live myself. right now. Well, my son Elvis was sometimes played with me, but at the moment, what I'm doing is these live concerts, just me solo. So it was really, really cool to go into the studio and actually record it exactly as I was doing it live, but just mic'd up properly, you know? Sort of mics all around and actually capturing what I was doing live. So that's the album that's coming out. In fact, I can show you like the cover here. Oh, in fact, actually, I've got another one. It's signed in that, but it's doesn't shine so much, probably. If you
Did you
can
do the
see that there.
artwork yourself, or did someone do it for you?
No, you know this bit of artwork? I've got a funny thing, I can actually show it to you. What it was, it just so happens I've got it next to me here. It was actually that I couldn't figure out what to do for the album cover, and I had a couple of photos in the studio, and I printed one out and I gave it to my daughter, and because he's doing A level art at the moment, she's just coming up for her exams. In fact, she's in her room painting right now, and she just drew on it. This is the original A4 bit of paper, and
Wow, very good,
she
very
just,
hip. Brilliant idea.
she just
Yeah,
spent like 10
love it.
minutes drawing on it, and I came back and I went, wow. That's what I need. And so that got turned into this, which looks
It's
like
her
a card.
first bit of actual art, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you
So it's
pay
a
her
bit
for
of
it?
actual art. Yeah.
Did you give her commission?
Oh, she's got a credit.
Well, that's fair enough.
When I get into profit one of these days, we'll give her something. That's exactly right. Yeah. But
I always think it's important to give people credit if they've done something.
oh my gosh.
Even if it's only like that bit on a record, like
Yeah,
10
yeah.
seconds, still
No,
worth it.
you know what? The guy who took the photograph itself has credit. My daughter who drew on it and made it actually a nice little piece of art, but has credit. And then this guy who is in Australia, who's been doing my graphic art for years, he has credit. And then on the back here, we've actually got names here of like the inner circle members of my Cairns club, and also people who basically bought the album like 6 months ago, you know, and so that, you know, we had a little pot of money to go and get things done, you know,
That's the
my
trouble, because
the
everybody,
MC Angels.
the trouble is you don't always get, if you're right, I think I'm right, I can remember if I remember rightly from what my friend told me, if you write a song, you get more back from the record as if you didn't write the song.
Well, the thing is, the songwriter gets royalties that go on. It doesn't mean they actually get very much, like particularly nowadays, but basically if it gets played on, like if it gets onto a TV show or something and gets played every time it's broadcast, there's a little royalty that comes back to the songwriter. And that's the same with like radio. So if you get radio play, you get a little royalty back, and you get a tiny little royalty for even from Spotify and stuff, but very
But you
small.
needed a big Christmas hit like Slade or somebody like that, and it'll be made for life.
Yeah, that's exactly it. If you write something that then goes on, or if you get a big hit, my goodness, yeah, it's the songwriter who will end up gets a particular royalty, you know. And so yeah, and yeah, and so when you're a plural, you write a lot like I do, that's my sort of passion. So yeah, but you have to get the airplay to actually get the royalties.
Do you get anybody covering your songs?
Every now and then, yeah, like I have a friend, Maria Davis, who's a jazz singer, and she still sings, but she doesn't do as many shows and stuff. She used to do a lot of shows, mainly in London, and she did a cover of a song of mine called "Gone," and it was a jazz cover. They changed all the chords, and it was so cool. And that was just beautiful. It was great because occasionally, like I remember once, I did this gig and she ended up doing a few songs beforehand, and that was one of them. And then I played it in the set that with my band. So that was like really
Yeah, but
cool, you
yeah.
know?
So where do people go and pick up your, if they want to buy an album or find out some more information, where would they go?
To me, I'm very much an independent artist, so I've got my own little store. You go onto my website, mariancairns.com, and follow the links there, and you can buy it. This comes out on the 3rd of May, but I have copies, so in actual fact, you can buy the vinyl directly from me, and digitally, like on Spotify and everything, that all comes out on the 3rd of May. Yeah,
Do you
but this is
prefer
the first time
vinyl?
I've made vinyl.
Yeah, do you prefer vinyl to digital?
Do you know what? It's my first foray into vinyl, because I've always done stuff on CD, and I love it. What's absolutely astonished me is the sound of it. When you play it, it's
Yeah, that's
got this
completely
warmth
different
to
than,
it.
yeah.
Yeah, and everybody always said that, but yes, I grew up when there was a vinyl around still, but for so many years and all of my professional life, everything's been on CD. So for me to actually hear my music on vinyl and suddenly go, oh wow. Oh wow, it sounds different and it sounds better. Yeah, that's been actually astonishing to realize, really
I
astonishing.
imagine sometimes you have to explain to kids what vinyl is.
Yes.
What's vinyl,
What's vinyl? Well, you remember those really old things. Like, but the great thing is that do you know apparently vinyl outsells CDs 4 to 1 at the moment?
apparently it's true that that is a true, because I think it's come back into vogue, because
Yeah.
you can still go out and buy a cheap second-hand record player. Needles aren't that expensive. Because years ago, most people would go out on a picnic, take a little record player with them, put a little bit of music on, drink, have a bit of food, whatever, go on.
Yeah. That's it. And I've got 4 kids and they've all got little portable record players. That they've gone and got themselves, and they like them. But the funny thing is, I've discovered that like one of my kids explained to me, no, he really loves the artwork for something, he'll buy it, but sometimes he never plays them. Sometimes he just like puts them up so he can see them because he likes like the artwork or whatever, and he'll listen to them on Spotify. So it's really interesting, and because Spotify or Apple Music or Deezer or whatever it is you use.
That's where the money is, unfortunately. That's where everybody goes.
Yeah,
Now, what do you think?
but the beautiful thing is that people actually get to hear music,
What do you think of the more modern way of sharing music, that some people go on YouTube or they'll go on TikTok, they create a song and it becomes a hit? But do you think sometimes they forget that you have to sometimes, if you want to become, go into group, like do a gig, you have to experience like the pub where there's only one person turns up, or everybody's been there. Yeah,
That's
like
right.
two people turn up and you think, why am I here? But you have to start somewhere. That's where you develop your skill for holding a crowd.
Yeah. No, it's completely different. I mean, look, I think that the social media and the platforms and YouTube and everything are so great because people actually get to hear the music. And in the old days, it really was. That pub with two people in it was the only time you could actually get somebody to hear your music, was those two people in the pub, so it was really hard. These days, yes, there's an awful lot of music out there, so they've got to wade through it, but you've got more chance of actually getting people to hear your music. So I really think that in most ways, for an independent musician, it's better. But the trouble is, it's hard because everything's free. But I think that if people really are into it, they want to support you. And if somebody doesn't have the money to buy stuff, they can share things. They can tell their friends about it. They can
You can
make a
always buy an
purchase.
album between you, and technically, if you want to. I can't actually say I know.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. It technically, do you know it's still illegal to record a song or a TV program? Technically, it's still illegal.
I didn't know it was. You
Yeah.
mean all those years we had the VHS players and we'd
Yeah, it's
record
still technically
cassettes?
illegal.
Oh,
As
wow.
such, I don't know the complications of the law, but I'm just thinking, well, it's a bit weird because it's too late now. You know, everybody been doing it for such a long time. I mean, I remember sitting there with a tape recorder waiting for Top of the Pops or Radio One and that. Yeah. I think everybody's
That's
done that.
it. That's it. I used to record Twin Peaks when I had gigs. You know, I was like, oh my God, I've got a gig that night. I've got to know what happened on Twin Peaks. And yet, so I used to record it religiously if I was not at ha if I was, you know, not at home. And I think we all did, and that was kind of cool. But I really love now that you can binge on a series. You find
I
one
do
you
that all
like.
the time now. It's so much easier.
Oh, great.
I think that's why it took off so much. And also, I think what they could do more of, although they keep going on about the woke world, but I think it's always we perpetuate this woke world on, you know, we make it happen. So I like it something when it goes against the stream and they just say, this program may contain violence, may contain sex, may contain men smoking or women smoking. I think in so you know straight away what's going to happen. If you don't want to watch it, like anything, if you don't like it, don't listen. If you don't like what you listen to, turn it off.
Exactly. Hit that fast forward button, or you know, that's exactly, turn it off. Yeah. But I what I found fantastic nowadays, as I said, I've got four kids and they have this access to music. We only used to be able to hear what was on the radio, or if one of a group of friends bought the album, and then you could hear it at their place. And that was the only way you were able to hear stuff. And so it's like, and we used to tape stuff off the radio. Oh, quick, that song's in. You'd hit record so you could play it later.
It sounded
You,
really naff when
yeah,
I
because it was never right. So, you know, but the fact that my kids go, oh, have you heard this fantastic song? And it's by, you know, well, I mean, Janis Joplin, or even some of the early Bowie albums, or like Led Zepp, or like Peter Gabriel, or you know whoever it's by. And it's because, and I've never really heard those albums, so the fact that they're able to, and they go into the history of music and they listen to everything and discover it, and they like that song, so they save it to their playlist, that then they play their playlist, and it you know shuffles the songs or whatever, and they get to hear them. And I think that's fantastic. And for musicians who it used to be, yeah, you've been forgotten about, well, people were discovering those recordings, you know, and that's beautiful. You know, like Melanie Kafka recently, not Kafka, say, well, Melanie, you know, she played at Woodstock and stuff, even as a teenager. And she done, is it Safka, her name? Anyway, that's been so great that in the last sort of 10 years, as I said, she died quite recently, but there was this suddenly renaissance of her music, and she was out there again doing music. And because she did like animal crackers and things like that, and I heard them when they were already old and nobody knew what had happened to it, sort of thing, by the time I got to hear the music. But how fantastic that this whole, there are now the generations, all of us are able to hear what she did, you know, those early songs. I actually think it's really great for humanity, you know,
I
the
quite agree.
art.
Well, thank you.